Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. The Day of the Dead has become increasingly high profile in New Mexico over the past few years, with celebrations like Albuquerque's Muertos y Marigolds Parade attracting thousands of attendees, and traditional practices like the creation of sacred altars to departed loved ones running headlong into not-so-traditional practices like Halloween costumes. What is Día de los Muertos, and how can people for whom it is not a traditional holiday engage with it in a way that respects its spiritual and religious significance? We want to hear from you. How do you celebrate Día de los Muertos? Do you have family traditions that you'd be willing to share? Or is Day of the Dead new to you? What questions do you have about this important holiday? Email us your questions and comments at letstalk@kunm.org or call 277-5866 or tweet using the hashtag #letstalknm. Now, I'd like to welcome our first guest by phone today. Dr. Maria Trillo teaches through the UNM School of Chicano Studies and is an expert on Mexican and local Día de los Muertos practices. Good morning, Dr. Trillo.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you for joining us. So, first of all, many people might think of Día de los Muertos as a sort of a Mexican Halloween. Is that accurate?
No, not at all. As I understand, Halloween has Celtic traditions. It comes from the Celtic understanding of life here on this planet and life afterwards. And we see darkness with Halloween. There's witches and goblins and scary things. With Day of the Dead, it's a festival of light and commemorating and celebrating with the deceased. It is believed that the souls come to be with their relatives and friends.
So where does Día de los Muertos come from? What is its origin?
It's pre-Hispanic. I can only speak from the Mexican perspective, but it is traditions that are ancient. It comes from the Americas, and the Native Americans have different ways of interpreting these understandings. So the Mexican Day of the Dead is what I am familiar with, and by saying that, I'm not saying all of Mexico either. Every group has their own way of interpreting and celebrating.
So it sounds like it's a sort of an intermingling of pre-contact traditions and then Spanish influence. Is that accurate?
To some extent, yes. Mexico, before Europeans came over, it was a very multicultural, multilingual, multi-dialectal place, and it still is. There are officially 62 indigenous groups still standing in Mexico, and these groups, and I say groups, some folks call themselves nations. Native American nations. So the Native American peoples, they speak different languages.
So these traditions, kind of from these different Native groups, then kind of blended with the Spanish traditions. Can you tell me maybe about how those elements would come together in the celebration of Day of the Dead?
In ancient times, the Aztec, I can speak a little bit better about the Aztec traditions, celebrated the deceased in August and September of the Gregorian calendar. But then when the Spaniards came and Catholicism came with them, there was the November celebrations, the All Saints Day. So, of course, these traditions did blend to some extent. Mm-hmm. And now we have quite a mixture. Yes, quite a mixture of traditions from all over Mexico, not just the Aztec. And, of course, the European traditions, customs.
Now, you are from El Paso. Can you tell me a little bit about how Day of the Dead is celebrated there?
Well, now it's very much like everywhere else with Halloween and Day of the Dead, not quite as separated as they used to be. But when I was a child, it was a time to, it took weeks, sometimes months, to prepare and have a family altar commemorating the ones that had passed on. And then we would go to the cemetery and eat with our relatives. We would clean the tombs, put new flowers, sing songs, pray. And that's when the grandmas, grandparents, the older relatives would tell us stories about the ones that had passed on. And that created a sense of family, a sense of community, where the deceased are no longer so far away. They are part of our everyday lives. And we would go to Juarez and get our sugar skulls with names of each other placed. We offered food and anything that was our favorite food or drink or toy. For children, we would make paper flowers or butterflies and give toys to the little ones that had passed on as well.
And how is it celebrated in other places in the Americas?
In the Americas, it's all very different. Of course, there's always song and dance, candles, a lot of light, flowers, good food. It's done in community. The four directions are observed. And there are some things that I may not talk about in public. Mm-hmm. But I think we share traditions in knowing that there is life after life here on this planet. And, of course, it goes from one group to another, from one nation to another. Some people observe it very closely, and others are also modernizing.
Okay.
If we can come back to Mexico, for instance, the people, the Mayan people, who had a different calendar than the Aztec, used to celebrate not on a specific day or time. But now, just like then, they would do kites with symbolic messages. And in Michoacán and in Oaxaca, they spend the night with their deceased, and they have beautiful tombs. They light up the entrances to their homes or to their patios with lights and petals of flowers, different types of flowers. It really is amazing. We don't do that in El Paso, or at least not when I was a child. It's not part of my tradition.
Okay, we are talking about Dia de los Muertos today, and we are taking your calls. Do you observe Dia de los Muertos in your family or community? What does the holiday mean to you? Give us a call at 277-5866. That's in the 505 area code. Or email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, Dr. Trio, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the common traditional elements to Dia de los Muertos celebrations, one of which is an ofrenda. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is and what meaning it has?
The ofrenda is another way of saying altar, commemorative altar. And so the ofrenda has a lot of symbolism. Again, in my traditions, it was just a one tier, a table, and we put all kinds of things on it, tablecloths and flowers and pumpkin squashes, candles, the pictures of the deceased. Some folks carry it into three levels, others into four, others into seven levels. So each level represents different, from my understanding and my teachings.
Now, these are levels of the altar, or what does this mean?
So, mm-hmm. levels of the altar, and each one has different colors and different items that are placed on it. And each level represents a step in the journey of the soul that is going forward into their place of rest, their place of eternity. And of course, this is where you see more syncretism going on, because you see a lot of the Catholicism that has also been blended into the traditions. So of course, you'll see crosses and saints and the Virgin of Guadalupe or other virgins. And again, I'm speaking very much from my tradition. If you speak to Mexicanos from different states, they're going to tell you slightly different variation of what I'm saying.
Okay. And how about the sugar skull? This is something we commonly associate with that. How is it made, and what is its significance?
Well, the sugar skulls are to remind us that life is sweet. Life is also bitter. And the reality, it is a skull. So the tangible form is not... And it doesn't last forever. It's not enduring. So you can eat it. You can decorate it. You can step on it. Now, this sugar is really hard sugar. It's made, with water. There is a mold. Most folks have a mold now. And nowadays, there's some of the cake decorating elements that are used as well. There are some family recipes for that. So
as Day of the Dead has become kind of more high profile in the United States, you often see things like corporations and companies using imagery from the holiday. And many people criticize that as a sort of a cultural appropriation. Can you tell me a bit about what cultural appropriation means when it comes to a holiday like this?
Well... cultural appropriation is when you take someone else's meaningful symbols or ceremonies, rituals, and adapt them for yourselves, use them without a clear understanding of why or what is the origins, what are the origins, what is the meaning behind it, what is the purpose in the community, what is the purpose for the family that's grieving, for example. I suppose I could say that there is benevolent adaptation of or acculturation, if you want to say. It's not stealing. There's a difference between acculturation and stealing of traditions. If you take someone else's a form of celebration and say, this is ours, and this is the way we're going to do it from here on out. That is not the way I see happening with a Day of the Dead. I don't see that happening at all. I think across the United States and other parts of the world now, the Day of the Dead has become rather famous, and people are putting on faces and we can say costumes of La Catrina, which is Lady Death, all dressed up to go formally out into the world. And that was made famous by Diego Rivera in one of his paintings. So acculturation, is it happening? I suppose some people are taking on this tradition and... not really knowing what it's all about.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Trillo. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, today, and we want to hear from you. Call in with your questions and comments at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. We are also live tweeting the show, so send us your comments using the hashtag Let's Talk NM. And we are going to a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM, representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Vessel Health and Dr. Harvey White support KUNM. Vessel Health answers important questions about heart disease, stroke risk, and offers personal recommendations on how to stay healthy. Treat the system, not the symptom. VesselNM.com.
This week in This American Life, Catherine's packing her knapsack to take to a protest in Hong Kong. She brings water, a first aid kit, and...
I bring makeup so that I can transform myself after the protest. It looks like you're not going to protest, because girls who are going to protest, they barely do makeup.
What's it like really to protest for months? And knowing China probably won't give them what they want, why keep protesting?
Sundays at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about the Day of the Dead tradition, and we're taking your calls, 277-5866, or email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, joining me in the studio today is Dr. Sofia Martinez, the founder of the Muertos y Marigold Parade in Albuquerque's South Valley. Good morning, Sofia.
Good morning. And let me clarify that I'm not the founder of the Muertos y Marigold Parade. I'm one of the members of it. I've been involved in it for 27 years, actually.
Okay.
The folks that started it were Jorge and Sandra. I can't remember the last name right now. It'll come to me in a minute. But it was at the Armory Center in the South Valley. It's now the Airspace Dance Center, I believe. Okay. But they're the ones that actually founded and started the Day of the Dead Parade, or Muertos y Marigold.
Well, thank you for the correction there. So now you are from Wagon Mound, New Mexico. Can you tell me a bit about how Day of the Dead is celebrated in northern New Mexico?
Well, I think in northern New Mexico and in New Mexico in general, it's more associated with the Catholic calendar, right? November 1st, November 2nd, Dia de los Muertos, and Dia de los Inocentes. And the first day, Dia de los Inocentes, is basically to really welcome into heaven all the innocents, and those are all the children. And Dia de los Muertos is another day where other people might go to heaven. But I think listening to the prior guest is... that there is a melding there that really kind of illustrates for us historically coloniality, right? Because Dia de los Muertos has now been celebrated on November during those All Saints Day, right? And I think it's really historically, it's very interesting because during that time in Europe, a lot of European populations were really talking about, well, what happens after one dies, right? Do you go to heaven, hell, purgatory? Those kinds of ideas are being kind of developed in Europe at the time that the colonizers came to the supposed new world. We know that it was a very old world. And that imposition, I think, is what sets the calendar for it. However, again, looking at different perspectives in Europe, I think death was seen as something to be scared about. It was very fearful. And I think, again, it talks about the point in history, right? I mean, it's fall, it's dark, it's getting colder, darkness... is a lot of uncertainty, right? And you don't know what's happening. It creates fear, it creates cold, it curates all these kinds of things. There's more people dying in the fall. Mm-hmm. We see the seasons basically can teach us a lot, right? And when the Europeans got here, well, death and dying was very, very different. It was a total paradigm shift. Many indigenous populations in this part of the world felt that dying was really when life began. So it wasn't anything to be afraid of, right? And so I think we see that when we look at the tradition in itself. In Wagon Mound, we mostly celebrated, as in other parts of New Mexico, church. We went to Mass. Maybe we went and we cleaned out the cemetery, our loved ones' graves. We didn't do much in terms of food. I don't remember that. But But those are things, again, as the previous guest was saying, in Mexico, they have certain traditions. Throughout Latin America, you'll find different traditions. I was speaking to a young man from San Felipe Pueblo, and he was talking to me about how in San Felipe, people go to different houses and they say a Hail Mary, and then the resident comes out and gives them a basket of oven bread or different kinds of things.
And that's the Native American community, right, of San Felipe?
Oh, San Felipe is one of the pueblos here in New Mexico, yes.
Okay.
So, no, I wouldn't say that is specific to San Felipe.
Right. Just, yeah, to make it clear, we are talking only about the specific places that we name, because there are many different ways of celebrating and observing this tradition. Okay, I have a phone call from Javier in Albuquerque. Good morning, Javier. What would you like to add or ask today?
Well, I was just hanging off every last word of Dr. Sofia Martinez there. Because I think this is such an important conversation, especially given the decision to take a pause in the Dia de los Muertos celebration here in Albuquerque. And I just, ever since I heard that decision was made, I just felt such deep respect for the organizers. Because as the previous panelist was, or speaker was saying, the doctor from Mexico, you know, death, I think for our culture, as Dr. Sofia was saying, it's complex. And our, sadly, because we're a people of struggle here in New Mexico and throughout throughout the Southwest, throughout Latin America, because we deal with more than our fair share of death and struggle, it's a different conversation, because you're trying to make peace with something that that we all deal with. That's can be devastating. And so to deal with Dia de los Muertos in any way that's less respectful than that is where it gets problematic. So I just wanted to basically say thank you to Dr. Sofia for what you're doing around this, and I look forward to what comes with the conversation.
Okay, well, that brings us to the Muertos y Marigold Parade, which celebrated its 26th anniversary last year. Can you tell me a little bit about how that parade started, how that celebration began?
And well, it started in different ways, and it, like everything else, it transforms slightly, right? I think that Jorge and Sandra Castro really had a more religious kind of perspective on how the parade would evolve. At that time, there were maybe 3 to 4 floats, and we went for maybe about 5 blocks today. It starts at Centro Familiar de Salud, that right where the police station and the First Choice Community Dental and Health Centers are at, and travels to the Westside Community Center. And
how long of a route is that?
It's about probably 3 to 4 miles, maybe. And, you know, our intention over the years, it's evolved. Like I said, at that time, it was a couple of floats in a couple of blocks. Today, one of our members has a data programmer, and then he also had a little drone that he sent up this year so that we could kind of get an idea of how much it's grown, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's gone pretty gigantic from that point to basically our lower end in terms of estimating with the drone the depth of the crowd from the start to the end, and then the population actually at the Westside Community Center, the low end was 17,000 people. The high end was really more like 26,000. So when we stop to think about that in terms of Raza Unida and Cambio, as well as some individuals, are the people in the committee, right? These are two unfunded grassroots community organizations that don't get any funding. It costs just the basics right now, it's costing us $15,000 a year to just do that, right? Mm-hmm. There's some support that the county gives in terms of maybe some police protection or police service, those kinds of things. But ultimately, we have to pay for that. And so there's a lot of questions associated with that, right? It's like, does it make sense for these two organizations to spend the whole year fundraising to provide a one-day party for people that may have a misunderstanding of what it's all about? I think the committee has done an excellent job over the last 26 years of really, with their workshops, which are monthly, beginning the day after Labor Day this year. Actually, it began on Labor Day, and every Saturday from 1 to 4, they're held, and they are basically workshops that look at different aspects of the Day of the Dead, whether it's the altars, the cempasúchil, the marigolds and their significance, the Sugar Skulls. That workshop was just held last week. So there's a lot of different workshops, a lot of work that we do prior to the parade to educate people about the difference between Halloween and Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. And it's very different. No one is allowed in the Muertos y Marigold parade that has a Halloween costume. Everyone must have their cars, lowriders. We have, of course, a lowrider contingent. And the first year, they just wanted to drive their cars in, right? And we said, no, you got to paint your face and put marigolds on the car. Otherwise, you can't be in the parade. And so people really kind of are honoring that. We don't have politicians in there. You can walk if you want, if you're a politician, but it's not campaigning, right? So We're really trying to do a non-corporate thing. There was a while back where, talking about cultural imperialism, right? Mm-hmm. There was a time back when actually Disney tried to copyright the idea of Day of the Dead. Since then, they've come out with two movies, right, that kind of look at Day of the Dead. But that was that's just an example of how co-optation of different cultural mm-hmm. things happens, right? And in terms of the committee itself, we really look at the Day of the Dead parade as a way for people to kind of engage in a different cultural tradition and be safe in doing it. And again, those workshops are really so that we can intelligently and respectfully enter into those discussions and into those spaces. And again, it's political satire in the spirit of José Guadalupe Posada, mm-hmm. Diego Rivera, Frida Kahlo, which really used all that imagery and idea to really do political satire, right, and really challenge what was going on politically in Mexico.
And that José Guadalupe Posada is the artist who created the Katrina, I believe. Is that right?
Well, all the imagery, basically, José Guadalupe Posada was a photojournalist or an art person, right? And he, a lot of the skeletal imagery is created for him, as well as Diego Rivera, right, who created the Katrina, as Dr. Trillo mentioned. But I think the three of them working at a particular political point in time really kind of realized that this was a really good way to kind of challenge the coloniality of Mexico, to challenge the cultural traditions, and to challenge a lot of different things through artistic ways, right? And that's kind of the approach that we've taken. We want to make sure that the South Valley Marigold Parade stays in the South Valley. The South Valley, some parts aren't even part of the city, right? Mm-hmm. We suffer a lot from serving the city of Albuquerque. For instance, we don't get a lot of trash service in some areas of the South Valley. We don't get certain kinds of things, right? But we do get the Superfund sites in San Jose and Mountain View Elementary. I mean, Mountain View Community, right? Mm-hmm. We want to promote the South Valley. We also want to promote respectful ways of incorporating into these kinds of activities. And that's one of the reasons why we took this hiatus. Because, when you have 27,000 people and you have people with 10-inch, 8-inch lenses on their cameras taking pictures, and then you see pictures of the Day of the Dead, Marigold and Muertos Parade on the Smithsonian website or on people's websites and even in the National Geographic, I've seen some of the photos from the parade on those websites. And it's very interesting that these people don't necessarily contribute in other ways. And that's cultural imperialism also, right?
So you mean by taking the imagery and then putting it on the website for their use without being a part of the honoring of the holiday?
Exactly.
That's the imperialistic aspect.
Yeah, because you could always call back and say, oh, well, I did this photographs. Would you all like a few?
Right.
I mean, rather than just developing your own resume mm-hmm. and your own career, those are very real issues in New Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of our narratives in New Mexico are really not constructed by New Mexicans. They're constructed by people from outside New Mexico, people that come from New Mexico that have political power, but those communities impacted, their voices aren't necessarily heard, right? We always bring in experts from outside of New Mexico to speak on behalf of ourselves, right? And so I think that's a real big issue. There was, there's just all kinds of issues associated with it. And that's why we want to take a little break, because even in our Facebook, people are really upset about, mm-hmm. there's all these people that come into the South Valley and don't even stay, don't come back another days. You know, they all kinds of issues. There's people that go to our workshops and we find out 2 or 3 years later that they're doing a workshop on something that they learned from us and don't necessarily give the committee credit and don't necessarily give other people credit. You know, maybe they're really good artists and, of course, and maybe they have power, so maybe they're really picked up by the media or picked up by whatever, and again, establishing in their careers as the experts, right, in someone else's culture and traditions.
And we have an email comment from Chris, who says that the more people discover that it's fun and a joy of dressing up and connecting with one's ancestors, the more Day of the Dead will be exploited for commercial purposes. Do you agree that the fun aspect of it kind of leads to this exploitive behavior?
I think to some degree it does. You know, there's almost no way that you can control that, right? I mean, that's just human behavior. But again, when it's the responsibility of those that are authentic to that culture to challenge when something like that happens. I mean, Disney was challenged on that, right? The other day I was making a comment about unfortunately, I've been through a lot of death and dying kind of issues in the last few days and or a few months. And Arsenio Cordova, a very well-known liturgist and musician and historian in Taos, recently passed away. And I was commenting on something he had said. You know, you die three times. First you die when you die, your last breath. The second time you die is when you're buried. And the third time you die is when no one remembers you, right? And someone said, oh, that comes from Coco, the film. And I go, no, it does not come from Coco, the film. It might have been in there. But, you know, it's that kind of loss of really kind of history and sense of place. And you know, as another example, recently I was watching a food program and they had these young kids that are, you know, like a Food Network thing. And they had, they were the finalists and they had a box for the young people, two boxes. One box was from Maine, and it was full of fish and different kinds of things. The New Mexico box, they had a box from New Mexico, so I was all excited, right, on National Food Channel. And guess what was in the box?
Was it Pueblo green chili? I can't
no,
imagine. What was it?
It was black beans, cilantro, and rice. Now, we all have eaten rice, but cilantro is something that New Mexicans have become accustomed to, it, right? And black beans are not New Mexican. I'm sorry. We're pinto beans. I like black beans. But, you know, and this is just a sad tragedy to have young people throughout the United States not know that. You know, you travel across the country and people say, oh, you're from New Mexico. How was life in Mexico? I mean, it's this. I mean, you know, those are sad things. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Okay, I have a comment from Serafina, and she wants to point out that Halloween also has spiritual origins from the Gaelic festival called Samhain, or I believe Samhain, perhaps, which celebrates the time when the veils between the worlds are thin, and we can communicate with our ancestors as well, and that it's not a time of fear. So that's interesting that Halloween may also have a similar kind of origin in this idea of celebrating ancestors or connecting with ancestors at one time, but it has changed since then.
And I think that, again, that's historical. If we really look at what was happening in Europe and other places, I think it's, again, that time of the year. It's universal things. People honor their dead. And again, that's a whole idea of there's more similarities than differences, right, which we say when we're looking at cultural imperialism, racism, class, all those kinds of issues, right? And I think when you travel around the world, it's even like ofertas or the altars, right? You can travel across the world, everybody has essences, right, whether it's incense, copal, sage, those kinds of things. You find them in China, in Japan, you find them Native Americans, you find them in Mexico, you find all that all over the place. The tradition of honoring our dead is universal. It's not Mexican or New Mexican, or so. I think that in that sense, yes, I think all traditions in that sense were in a way to look at those issues.
That makes sense, and I think that we should probably observe these traditions and try to keep that respect and honor ourselves.
And I do want to talk, you know, right now, a lot of the folks that I work with are really looking at gentrification in Albuquerque, right? Because we see, and that's one of the reasons why we took that hiatus, because we see that Albuquerque is being developed in a way that is not necessarily serving the people of Albuquerque. And that's not talking about just Albuquerque, it's New Mexico in general. I think New Mexico has always been kind of the neo-colony of the United States, whether we're, people consider us to be part of the United States or not, right? But it's kind of like New Mexico, what was that? New Mexico, that website that talks about New Mexico in such a positive way, New Mexico True,
yes.
Right? And then there was a website that was created called New Mexico Truth. And we really need to look at that because we can't be talking about New Mexico True and going to the Native Nations and taking beautiful pictures of dances and people and costumes and all this other stuff, but really not talking about the poverty and the power relations and again, how our lives are constructed in the state. There's very few even news outlets, including KUNM, that really our lives, our histories, our voices, our stories aren't necessarily constructed by the people themselves, right? We may be interviewees, but we're not necessarily in control of the story, right? And I don't, it's not an individual critique, right? There's a book that I was reading, and it's kind of old now, White News, Why Local News Programs Don't Cover People of Color by Don Hyder. It's an interesting read because he does his research in Albuquerque and Hawaii. I can't remember exactly what city. Mm. But it's very interesting because he talks about the number of people, like even our radio stations that have people of color, or television stations, yet people of color stories aren't necessarily lifted. So it's a real interesting publication.
We will definitely have to come back to that. We are going to take a quick break. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM, and we are discussing Dia de los Muertos. We'll be back in a minute.
The National Museum of the American Indian is loaning dozens of Tewa Pueblo pots to the Poe Cultural Center in New Mexico. It's part of a pilot program to strengthen relationships between tribes and museums. We'll learn more about this unique program on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Mozart wrote this for piano and small orchestra, but what if you only have a really small orchestra, like 5 people? Coming up, pianist Peja Mujiewicz and friends in concert playing this miniature version of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 12 on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about Day of the Dead with Dr. Sofia Martinez, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866 or tweet using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Now, one thing that we've kind of just touched on a little bit so far is the satiric aspect of Day of the Dead depictions. You talked about how Katrina and other skeletal figures were originated by like Diego Rivera or Guadalupe Posada. Could you talk a bit about how the Day of the Dead, the Marigolds y Muertos parade, incorporates that satiric aspect into its what it does?
I think more specifically by its themes. This year, our theme is "I'm not your calaca." I'm not your skeleton, right? And it has a skeleton, and it really reflects to the discussions we were having, right, with gentrification, all those. I'm not your calaca. I'm not your skeleton. You know, and someone was saying, "Well, what does that mean?" I go, "Well, it means whatever you want it to mean in a lot of ways." Because no, don't use this to promote your career and your resume and whatever. You know, don't say that you're developing for Albuquerque when it's clear that it's not that. So no, I'm not your calaca, you know what I'm saying? So in the past, there's been different things that relate to immigration, no fear, no papers. I can't remember exactly the theme that year, but every year there's a theme that really addresses some political issue, and we ask that people kind of address it. It's not necessarily always happens, but again, it's kind of a way for people to really challenge what's going on politically or socially in our society and in our city and our state, and really take a playful kind of Day of the Dead perspective on it. Right
now, you've mentioned gentrification in the South Valley. how does that with work? Sorry, how does the perception of the South Valley through like the Day of the Dead parade? How do you feel that that interplays with the gentrification that that you said is going on?
Well, I think that, again, the parade brings in thousands of people into the South Valley. Do these people come in on a daily basis to support that, right? And I don't mean, you know, we've been talking a lot about gentrification. There's a community that basically just got permitted to develop something like a 450 or maybe 45 homes along the Rio Grande around west of the Rio Grande, right? Mm-hmm. And this community is totally not from there, and they're like, oh, well, we just wanted to place our little casitas in our little neighbor. And again, language is a real way mm-hmm. of, you know, all of a sudden everybody has a little casita. Well, what does that mean? You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying to people? You know, cultural imperialism also happens through language, right? We have mm-hmm. a lot of organizations that have Spanish names, indigenous symbolism, etc., and they're not serving those communities, and they're not necessarily of those communities. So how does the parade, like you were saying a while ago, it can be fun and whatever, but mm-hmm. at the same time, then people are coming and saying, oh, well, land is cheap here in the South Valley. Maybe we should buy some land here. Oh, maybe we, you know, one thing that, and it's in jest and kind of play, but it's also realistic, no? We say, well, what are some indications of when you know that your community has been gentrified? Number one, all of a sudden there's all these bikers in your community, right? Then all of a sudden there's a studio tour. And that mm-hmm. happens in northern New Mexico. That happens all over the place. And very few artists from those communities are involved in it, right? We have people that have just moved into the South Valley and already are doing artistic studio tours mm-hmm. that are not necessarily reflective of the people in the South Valley. Those are things that are not right. We have at the University of New Mexico, the architecture and planning department has basically a lot of national ideas from big cities that are brought here, and then they're tested out in the colony. They're not necessarily good for us. Look at the art.
The okay? art project.
The art project took money from
Albuquerque Rapid Transit, just to
yes.
make sure.
I mean, how many years have we been waiting for it now? Mm-hmm. And how has it inconvenienced us, right? For 3 years now, how many businesses have closed down? And clearly the businesses that have closed down weren't people that had money. Those were small businesses that were trying to make a living, and probably the majority of them were New Mexican. Those have closed down. I think something like 50-some odd businesses closed down, not to mention the traffic bottlenecks that's caused in other streets. Mm-hmm. And money from what was called the pocket of poverty, monies for those areas basically was used to do that. So one group that's really addressing this is the Historic Neighborhood Alliance, which that's the monies that should have served Martinez-Town, South Broadway, and the downtown area. No, they basically are having on October 28th at the Second Presbyterian Church on Edith, they're going to be having a program called the People's Update on the Status of Civil Rights in Albuquerque in the U.S. And as a matter of fact, Martinez-Town has a racial discrimination suit against the city of Albuquerque for a lack of inclusion of people of color in those decisions, right, or those communities. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, it's people from New York and other places that are making decisions for our communities, and people say, well, you should have been involved. Well, it's not that easy. You know what I'm saying? Even if we look at the census, the census talks about Hispanic, let's say. 75% of Hispanics have computers. However, only 50% of them have intermittent access to the internet. Mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean? You don't get the internet unless you're at a restaurant or a coffee house, right? Native Americans don't even make the cut.
So there are very important issues that we have to address beyond the parade itself and the photogenic aspects of the mm-hmm. South Valley. And in fact, we actually have a caller from Albuquerque. His name is Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, sir.
And what is your question today?
I just have a comment. I'm a photographer. I don't make a living at it. I don't care to make a living at it. I do it because of my interest in the art. And I've done a lot of work in the South Valley. And I just feel like the doctor is putting a lot of pressure on this parade and everything else. No one's perfect. And, you know, if they don't want photographers at the parade, say so. I consider myself a guest. I would never go where I'm not wanted. If they don't want even Anglos, say so.
Okay, thank you, Mike. And so, Dr. Martinez, how do you address his comment? How can someone who is interested in being down in the South Valley and perhaps has a photographic bent, how can he respectfully do his art? Well, what are the things he needs to do?
Well, I don't think ever, not once did I say that people weren't welcome, including photographers or white people. And again, when I talk about white people, I'm not talking about individuals. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a system of white supremacy,
right,
basically.
Whiteness.
Exactly, or whiteness. And so, no, I mean, if you come in with good intention and you're taking photographs and you're, I mean, usually, and to the caller, it's like usually the people that aren't making a profit out of it are the ones that take it more to heart. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And it's not about that everyone is welcome, but everyone is welcome to participate respectfully. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like everything else. In the Native American traditions, you take something, you give something. And I think that's a really wonderful quality for all of us to think about. When we go out and we take something, then give something back, right? And I'm... you know, so again, it's not about that. You know, just because people challenge sometimes mm-hmm. doesn't mean they're talking about exclusion. Because, you know, a lot of times as people of color, anytime we raise our voices, we're like, oh, you know, you have a chip on your shoulder. It's the racism card. Mm-hmm. No, this is about reality. If you don't want people to speak truth to power, well, then say that.
And
but, you know, don't marginalize, you know.
And if we're talking about someone like Mike, who I think sounds like an amateur photographer, it's really about intention and respect. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you've mentioned, the parade, the Muertos y Marigold Parade, is canceled this year. Well, first of all, will it be coming back?
Yes, it'll be coming back. There's a lot of interest, obviously. And again, talking about co-optation, right? It's incredible how many folks basically started calling television stations and city councilors and commissioners and saying, oh, we're really upset about this. Some people just wanted to do it. Oh, we're doing the Day of the Dead. Well, you know, doing it isn't that easy. I mean, we spent the whole year working to produce the parade, right? Mm-hmm. It's a pretty complicated activity, and there's a lot of work that goes into it throughout the year, so it's not that easy as saying in August when we put out the letter, September, oh, well, we're going to do it. Really? Well, it's not that easy, and quite frankly, well, you know, 27 years ago, there weren't any Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was a teacher at that time in the public schools, and I got challenged a little bit for doing Day of the Dead. There were some kids that were crying when I was doing my presentations, and the principal called me in, and I goes, well, there was a teacher, you know, said that you made the kids cry. And I go, did you bother to ask the kid why he was crying? His auntie died. His, you know, there was a person that died in that family. The kids in our schools need a way to grieve, and we need to support that, not be afraid of it, and not turn other people in for creating that space for people, right? So
can you tell me a bit about why is the parade canceled this year? How did that decision come about?
Well, again, for the discussion, the issues that we've been discussing today, right? Because we had to really look at, okay, does it make sense for us as 15 people, whatever which are the basically main people in the parade over the years, to just spend all this time and effort raising money for a one-day party that maybe be misconstrued? As more people come in, it gets more and more misconstrued, right? And so we're just kind of trying to take information from different people. We've met with City Councilor Clarissa Pena. We've met with Commissioner Quesada, and they're very supportive of the parade. As a matter of fact, they talked about how many calls they've gotten because people do enjoy it, right? And so we're looking at ways that we can collaborate without necessarily the city or the county commission taking it over, right? Because we don't want it to be politicized. We want it to be supported. Mm-hmm. Because, and again, it's not to create division, but people are so fearful about challenging things, and I understand that. You know what I'm saying? You get a lot of negative feedback, like the parade. And again, this I'm putting myself out to be accused of different kinds of things, but there's a lot of people that you know, we've never been given any money by the city or the county to do this activity. I'm not sure about the Martin Luther King parade or the Cesar Chavez, but I don't know. I know they don't get big money from the city councilors. Yet a while back, we saw for Gay Pride, which I supported, been in the parade, $30,000 for a median. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of money to paint a median. I would like those $30,000 to be given so that we can talk about transportation in the South Valley, right? Sometimes they critique the bikeways, and people say, oh, don't you like bikers? Don't you like... I own a bike. I bike. Mm-hmm. But in terms of getting people to work and the economics of it, we need more bus stops in the South Valley. I mean, just in the news the other day, they were talking about cutting transportation stops and more transportation, right? Well, we know across the country, transportation has never supported itself, but it gets people to work, and it creates economic opportunity and economic growth, right? So, again, how are we spending our money? Are we spending it on thousands of bike trails throughout the city, and who is that serving? Is it serving the populace of Albuquerque that everybody is, again, making their resumes and the careers on, working for the poverty, working for the disenfranchised, working for whatever? And after a while, you know, that gets old. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's building their careers or resumes off of our poverty, and there's a lot of misnomers, right? I can go off on all kinds of crazy stuff. So you have to control me there.
Sure.
Bring me back.
Well, let's go back to the Day of the Dead. And for people who are disappointed maybe that the parade is not happening this year and would like to either know more about Day of the Dead or participate in some sort of activities, is there something that they can do, or do you have a suggestion for what they should do with this this time of hiatus for the Muertos y Miracle Parade?
Well, I think during this hiatus, people should come to our workshops and go to all the different activities that now Albuquerque does have, right? 27 years ago, there was not much happening on Day of the Dead. But now, whether you're talking about the South Broadway Cultural Center, the National Hispanic Cultural Center, UNM, there's just an abundance of activities and stuff going out throughout the city, and go to those places. Go with an open heart, with good intention, and people are going to welcome you with an open heart and good intention. I think that that's what it's all about. And we're not always going to agree on things. I mean, I don't want, like even that comment that I made about the median, I don't support folks trying to destroy that. As people of color, we understand what violence is all about. That's a whole other thing. But we can politically talk about resources and how they're used, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say the median, you mean the rainbow, the rainbow median in Knob Hill. Okay, I understand. So, and do you feel that it's important to kind of keep these Day of the Dead celebrations and observations open to the public?
Yes, I think that's what they're for. They are, and I mean, that's the one way that we as different peoples, different cultures, different traditions can come together and really commune and share and learn. And those are very important to creating a more pluralistic, more nonviolent society, especially in the time that we're facing right now. But, you know, having a hiatus and really talking about things that maybe aren't comfortable, that's not a bad thing. Those are good things. We do not move forward unless there's friction in a car, right? You have to have a little bit of friction to move forward, and not friction to the violent point that, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, there's very little that people of color create in terms of violence that isn't created by our own leaders right now in Washington, D.C., and that has really created a lot of violence. So, you know, it's a time to reflect and really honor what that means. People across the world honor their dead.
Now, for folks who are interested in maybe taking part of one of these workshops, where can they find more information?
Muertosymiracles.org. And we have one, as a matter of fact, during balloon season, one year we had like 150 people show up because the balloonists were all looking for things to do, right? And the most popular workshop is the Sugar Skull workshop, because teachers across the APS want the recipe for that and want to make it and share it with their students. All of these things are beautiful. You know what I'm saying? A student that has gone through the loss of someone.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Martinez. That is all the time we have today. Thanks to everyone who called in to share their thoughts. Thanks so much to Dr. Trio as well. Let's keep this conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM. On Facebook, you can search for KUNM Radio or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Ty Bannerman. Our engineer today is John Strader. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Bryce Dix live tweeted, and May Ortega produced. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.